SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The only place in football where the offense is always on the field is on Moneyline, with the two best hosts in radio, Donnie Wrightside.
If anybody wasn't watching, listen, I don't know what you were doing.
And Kevin Walsh.
Forget act like you've been there before.
On the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius XM Channel 159.
That's every day now officially underway. It is Friday right here on the Sports Grid Network. I'm your boy, Donnie Wrightside here, and I got you for the next hour. The hottest topics, you know we got them covered. We'll hit some of the combine. We're going to hit Matthew Stafford right off the bat. Big games in basketball tonight. College basketball tomorrow, sensational. We'll take a look at some of those games. Also, games tonight. Maybe we'll go one by one and see what we can find and see some of those intricacies that we can work to make ourselves some money. Sirius XM Channel 159. You know the deal at this point. I'm looking right now as I head over to YouTube. Let me just hit the refresh button on the right computer here and bring up the show, which you can do. Hey, Donnie, how can I watch you when you're on the radio? Simple. Sports Grid on demand on our YouTube channel. Hit the subscribe button. Come in and say hello. Just like my guy Jordan P is out there. By the way, Jordan P, I gave you a nice little shout out here this morning on the early line if you were listening today. So having fun with that. You can watch. You can listen. You can comment. Once again, Sports Grid on demand on our YouTube channel, live with Restream. Get in there. Also, if there's other ways, you say, Donnie, can't get around my computer, can't watch on YouTube. Simple. Go to the Sports Grid app on your phone. Easy to watch, learn, and listen, as well as sportsgridradio.com. You're listening right now on Sirius XM channel 159. So many different ways to watch. So many different ways to listen, so many different ways to have fun with us and reach out. So that's out of the way, the business dealings. Let's get into the fun. And it always helps us now to see what's taking place at the combine, which I'll get to in a minute. But what's taking place generally outside the combine, you might ask? Well, that's Matthew Stafford. And according to Diana Russini this morning, there is a meeting set up this afternoon with the Los Angeles Rams, between Matthew Stafford and his people, and Sean McVay and the Rams and their people there. It looks like, and just to go back just a few short days ago, hey, maybe he's on the market, Matthew Stafford we're talking about. Maybe he's not on the market, Matthew Stafford we're talking about. No, we heard. This is just a chance where Matthew Stafford can go around and gauge the interest from other football teams on how much money he would actually make if other teams actually had him on their team. That didn't make too much sense, did it? But we were led to believe it did. Where it's like, no, the Rams don't want to get rid of him. The Rams want to keep him, and everything's going to be fine. We just want to get a gauge on price point, which sounds all fine and good. But to let your quarterback go on the open market per se and try to find another suitor and then come back to you, feelings could be lost at that point, right? Oh, Matt, thought you wanted to be with us long term. That looks like I'm going to get paid somewhere else. But also understand this. When you're looking at Matthew Stafford from the lens of he's a good football player, and he is, he's not 30 years old, he'll be 37 next year. He didn't throw 50 touchdown passes last year. He threw 20 of them, right? Still, I do think he is a quality quarterback, which means wherever he would go outside of Los Angeles would be a spot for Matthew Stafford to say, you know what? I'm going to get paid with a legitimate chance to win. Do you know the two teams right now at the top for Matthew Stafford that have shown to be possibly negotiating with him and where he would want to go? Two bottom dwellers. Yes, two bottom dwellers, which this is a mystery right now. This is a mystery. And pretty soon, it's not going to be an unsolved mystery at this point. Why would Matthew Stafford leave Los Angeles to go play for the Raiders and the Giants? Something we don't know for sure, but it looks like that way. Because why? Here's what we're hearing on the open market for those teams. Now, granted, there will be draft compensation that's going to have to go if Matthew Stafford does leave Los Angeles. And the Rams have him under contract, so they'd have to agree to trade Matthew Stafford. Let's remove that from the conscience right now, where what the team is going to give up. Those two teams, looking at a two-year contract for $100 million guaranteed. Then you might say, Donnie, He's told us all along, like, front level starting quarterbacks are going to make $50+ million. And I agree with you. But it's where the money is actually coming from and which team it's coming from. If you look at $50 million spent on the Rams right now, you might think there's a legitimate chance that the Rams can make a Super Bowl run next year. Why would the doubt be? They came into Philadelphia in the snowstorm and almost stole that football game away from the best team in the NFL, which is the Philadelphia Eagles, right? Jalen Carter doesn't get that sack on Matthew Stafford. They might be Super Bowl champions. It's as real as that. I know sometimes you don't want to play it out that way, but if you extrapolate, that could have been an option for the Rams. So from that point on to now early in the offseason, where did it change for the Rams and Matthew Stafford? And also understand this, because I'm baffled by the Rams. But for me, I'm actually baffled even more by the teams that actually want Matthew Stafford. And sometimes, you know, you get the wisdom, per se, back in your life where it's like, all right, well, why do you think this way, Donnie? Has your thought process changed? Because it's supposed to be about selling your fans and the concept of we are trying to actively get better. There is something to that. Don't get me wrong. There is. But from me going from a fan, let's just say, in my mid-20s to now in my mid-40s, where me as a football fan, I'm an Eagles fan. I've seen two Super Bowls since now, 2017 season, and it's great where the opinion changes on what you actually want out of your football team. It's been a long time since the Raiders won a world championship. Like, I don't know, when was it? 83? Just going off the top of my head. Like a Marcus Allen team from the early 80s, I believe. They haven't won since then. Now you take a look at the New York Giants, who do have a couple Super Bowl trophies, but now going on over a decade since the last time they've won a trophy. But if you are looking at these fan bases, is that all they're asking for? Like, you are so incompetent as a front office and ownership group that if they land a quarterback like Matthew Stafford, you're happy because you might be somewhat competent over the next 2 to 3 years, which means you're probably not going to win anything, but at least you don't have to watch a football team that would win 4 or 5 games. See, I don't buy into that script anymore at my age. You are either on a path to winning a championship or you're not. There's no in-between anymore. If you are the New York Giants with a high draft pick and you desperately need a quarterback, and yet you're going to give up draft compensation on your woeful, inept, non-talentless offense and defense to get Matthew Stafford to get pummeled behind that offensive line and spend $50 million per year on that quarterback. And then when he's done, let's just say at age 40, keep in mind, where has this ever worked out all that much outside of Tom Brady, the best quarterback in the history of the sport, going down to Tampa Bay and having a couple good years? Aging quarterbacks on new rosters at big money, they usually don't work out. So if you're the Giants and you say, hey, man, we're going to win 9 games next year. Okay. Let's just say you missed the playoffs. And the next year, hey, man, we're going to win 8 games. All right. Just paid your quarterback $50 million both those years, $100 million, got nothing out of it. And also, who was your quarterback after that? You don't have one. What a bad move for the New York Giants. Conversely, Las Vegas Raiders, a team that hired Pete Carroll in the offseason, which I liked. All right. It's been around winning organizations, got a Super Bowl championship, had, you know, great success in college. Perfect steward at an older age to say, you know what? I'm going to get this team back in line so when the next coach comes in, they're really ready to win. Matthew Stafford going to Las Vegas? For what? To go up against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid? To go up against Bo Nix and Sean Payton? To go up against Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert? What are we doing? Those two teams that are looking to give $100 million to a quarterback who have zero shot to win anything. Complete ineptness. Stupidity at the highest levels, but what do you expect from two really bad organizations in the NFL, the Giants and the Raiders? Come on now, draft your quarterback. Enough said. Sonny writes out on a Friday, and I'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Right back at it. I guess you could say it's a football Friday here on the Sports Grid Network, right? Because you have the combine going on, which, never ceases to amaze me, the people that actually get excited by it. But you know what else you can get excited to tomorrow? It's March 1st tomorrow. And if anybody knows this song, yeah, P. Diddy and the Family remixed this up from David Bowie. Let's dance. Get your dancing shoes on, because this weekend, the Atlantic Sun gets underway with their conference tournament. This Sunday, yeah, March 2nd, we're underway. Next week, the non-Power 5 smaller school conferences get underway. There's 32 conferences that are going to tilt over the next 2 weeks, and it starts on Sunday. And I love it. So much fun. The last chance versus like competition, conference teams versus conference teams before we get into March Madness. I'm excited about that. A big night in college basketball. We'll get to in a few moments here. A big weekend in college basketball, because tomorrow's Saturday, and you know the big boys are playing, which includes Kentucky at home in Rupp Arena, taking on the Auburn Tigers, the number one team in college basketball, with Mr. Broom hoping to win the Wooden Award, which means he's the best player in college basketball. Duke also takes on Florida State. They should roll Florida State, but Cooper Flagg looking to get back into that race, which seemingly at the FanDuel Sportsbook shows a minus 250 favorite here for Broom to be the best overall player in college basketball and take the Wooden Award at that point. Now, the combine is going on. Do you guys like it out there? Honestly. Do you watch the combine? Do you take any like stock from the combine? You think you find hidden gems at the combine? Because everything I'm saying right now is nobody really feels like working out, which is the case. I don't think you should there. Unless you are a borderline draft pick, it doesn't make any sense to do any of these things. Do it in the comfort of your pro day. Like Cam Scadaboo, remember him, Arizona State running back? So much fun to watch. Yeah, he's not doing anything out there in Indianapolis. I'm going to save it for back in Tempe when I'm going to go with my guys and comfortability with my workouts, get an extra couple weeks to prepare for that. But I just wanted to show my face and put the hoodie on and let you know that, yeah, I'm in the draft and any questions that you have for me at this point. But I don't like it at all. Like shorts, T-shirts, and I told Ben this morning on the early line. Anybody out there, and you guys can confirm listening, have you played, you know, peewee football, middle school football, high school football, college football, pro football? You always remember, like, there's those players that you have on your team that you see, like, man, that guy really worked out in the offseason. Looks like he got faster. Looks like he's bigger. But then the coach, like, you run through, like, usually 2 or 3 days of practice. Maybe you're just in shells. Maybe just a helmet. Maybe not at all. Just putting the jersey on. And they always used to tell you, all right, we're going to separate from men from the boys here. The minute we get the pads on, let's just say, in 2 days on a Wednesday. And you'd all look forward to that. Because the guys that could catch the football, run the football, make plays, boy, it changed once those pads got on. Because now you had to do it when you had circles waving around you and people looking to light you up. And me being a receiver, you know, for my high school and college career, it was different. You could run in 7-on-7s and go over the middle because I didn't play in the time frame that you're talking about now. I played where in practice, I got helmets, crown of helmets stuffed into my jaw repeatedly. Same thing in the game. Good, clean hit. Try to knock me out. That's the way it was. So when you were running 7-on-7s in just shells, which means just a helmet, maybe a jersey, oh, it's easy going over the middle. Oh, you want to run that 10-yard dig route right across the linebacker's face in the zone where they're sitting on you? No problem. They can't touch you. Once you put on the pads, it's a completely different game changer. You see alligator arms out there at wide receiver. You see, hey, man, maybe I don't want to run out there and cut my route short because I know there's a chance I can get lit up. And I always used to like the fact that you'd even run against a scout team where they'd know the play that's coming and they jump the route and just level you over the middle. Got right back up. No big deal. Had some words. Back to the huddle you go. The reason I say that is you can't get the totality of players at a combine. You have hundreds of snaps, if not thousands of snaps of these players. Quarterbacks, linebackers, running backs, wide receivers, defensive ends that you can see. No way my general manager would be out in Indianapolis going, you know what? Just saw Cam Scadaboo run the 3-cone drill. Now I'm going to make him a draft pick for me when I didn't know if I was going to do that. Or how about Isaiah Bond, right? Wide receiver here for Texas. He says he's actually going to break Xavier Worthy's 40-yard dash record. Says he plans to run a 4.2, possibly a 4.1. Now, if he runs that, does that mean you like him better than what you saw on tape? Nonsense. How about an offensive line? hey, look at that. He benched, you know, 225, 36 times. I think I'll take him now. But didn't you watch him on tape? Could he run block? Does he pass block? Is he great at being a pulling guard? Is he a tackle that has movement? Could he be a center that can really swing out and pick up that blitz on the opposite side of the formation, if you call it? That's what you look forward to. That's what you do here at the Combine. The one thing I do like about the Combine is all teams are centralized in one location. I don't care about, you know, Cam Ward getting up to the press conference. I'm like, hey, what do you think? I'm not going to work out. All right. What teams have you talked to? All of them. How's your offseason going? Great. How did you like it at Miami? Fantastic. All right. Thanks for your time, Cam. Like, I don't care about that at all. But I do like the information that comes out because it's a lot like the owners' meetings that we talk about where, again, all the owners and general managers in the same spot. That's when deals come into fruition. That's when trades get talked about, and away you go with that. Because there are some interesting things in the NFL that are being talked about right now. Like, will Myles Garrett get traded? Myles Garrett says, you know what? Trade me. And if you don't, I'm not even looking towards an extension here with you at any point. Money's not going to make me happy in Cleveland. Well, maybe you can get in that general manager's ear and you can start that conversation of maybe he is going to be put up for sale and how much you would pay for him in the way of draft compensation. You also have other things like, all right, well, the Kansas City Chiefs slapping the franchise tag on Trey Smith. Or how about Travis Kelce just coming back into the fold and say, I'm going to play in 2025. But all the eyes are going to focus and a lot of things are actually going to change because as we talked about to open the show, Matthew Stafford of the Rams, if by the end of the day, it's not of the Rams, that's going to change a lot of landscapes on teams that maybe the Raiders wanted to trade up and get a quarterback. Well, if they have Stafford, won't do that. Same thing with the New York Giants and Matthew Stafford if they trade from or don't. Are they back in it? Do they trade up in the draft to get to one or two to try to get a quarterback? So many dominoes will fall, and hopefully, as Diana Russini says today, they're meeting in person out in L.A. Maybe that changes things. I want to get to some college basketball next. Let's get after it right here on Moneyline.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Right back at it, Moneyline here on a solo mission. It's a Friday on the Sports Grid Network. Big basketball weekend, too. So I did want to touch on some NBA yesterday. Sometimes I've been having a good week here in the NBA. Yesterday really wasn't the case. I thought the Nuggets would be able to handle the Bucks. They didn't. They lost that game outright, 121-112. I thought the Magic and the Warriors would stay under their total of 212.5. Steph Curry drops 56 points in that game, 121-115 final. The Warriors win that. Also taking a look at the one game I did get right was the Pelicans getting a handful of points against the Phoenix Suns. They beat them outright. They're going to play again tonight, which we'll get to in just a few moments. And the Lakers and Timberwolves thought that game would go over the total. Hit a game with Anthony Richardson that he ends up getting tossed, only ends up with 12 total shots. And the Lakers win that 111-102. LeBron James, 33-17-6 as a 40-year-old. Doesn't make any sense. And a lot of people out there, just hanging. He ain't just hanging on. He's one of the best players in the NBA. He's 40 years old. He's been playing in the NBA since he was a teenager. That is absolutely outrageous. The numbers that he is piling up, I don't know if anybody is going to be able to cross over those because who is going to want to play that long? And also, who can play that long at such an elite level? It is a rarity in professional sports, and LeBron James certainly beating father time right now. What does he play, 45, 46 years old? I mean, really? Like, how long does LeBron James actually want to play? We're going to find out to see where it goes. But tonight, a lot of interesting games on the card. If we are lining up, maybe the biggest game of the night, one of the biggest in the NBA season so far, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics. 5:33, 5:34 on the rotation, 7:30 tip time from Boston. This line opened up at FanDuel in New Jersey at a -3.5 point favorite towards the Boston Celtics. That line across the board right now, guys, -2.5. A total, which opened up 231.5. Now up to 233.5, so expected some points here. When you look at the anticipated starting lineup between these two, it's as talented as you can get, and everybody is healthy. Jrue Holiday, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Kristaps Porzingis for the Boston Celtics. Garland, Mitchell, Strus, Mobley, and Allen for the Cavaliers. Two really good teams. But I got to tell you, I actually don't agree with the line movement in this game from 3.5 to 2.5. And you know me, I've been a big proponent here this year of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Great basketball team, going to be the top seed in the East with a legitimate chance to take down the Boston Celtics and get to the NBA Finals. And the record says they're going to hang in there. If you look at this line, that's a stone cold line for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So typically, you would find me backing the Cleveland Cavaliers in this spot. But tonight, I'm not doing that. It's the Boston Celtics tonight. That 3.5 down to 2.5, I'll take the discount. If you are looking at an NBA champion, which the Celtics are, they won it last year. Sometimes it takes motivation to get through the next regular season. They got a really good record, just not the best in the East. But if there's one game where the Boston Celtics understand the magnitude of the spot and the importance for that game down the line, it's going to be tonight. Ben and I talked about it earlier on the early line. For myself, I think the Celtics win this game and also send that shot across the bow like, yeah, you're having a really good season. But when the rubber meets the road, we're the better basketball team and we think we're the more talented basketball team. And tonight, the Boston Celtics are at home. So if there's one game during the regular season that you can say the Boston Celtics will be completely engaged with the team they're playing, it's tonight with the Cavaliers. Now, from my angle, is it going to be a surprise if you wake up tomorrow morning and you check the paper and say, you know what? Man, Cavs won that game by 5 points in Boston. That's going to change some thought processes around the NBA, particularly at the sports books, to say, huh, I know it's only one game and it's the regular season, but the Cavaliers winning in Boston in late February, March is tomorrow. Maybe that gets them off that number of a 7-1 price, let's just say, to win the NBA championship and drops them down just a bit. But for me tonight, this is a game where the Boston Celtics rally the troops in the TD Garden and win this basketball game. Another interesting one tonight, which has big line movement already. The Los Angeles Lakers played yesterday. Starters were in. LeBron James told you, fantastic night. Luka Doncic, decent night, but just can't make a three-point shot, it seems like, to save his life. Another 1-for-9 performance. This line opened up to the Lakers as a -1 point favorite. That line now sits right now as the Clippers, a 4.5 point favorite, despite some of the outlets I'm checking that have Luka Doncic and LeBron James in the estimated starting lineup tonight. But the Clippers also estimated to get back Norman Powell as well. So Harden, Dunn, Powell, Leonard, and Zubac tonight. I'm reading that line movement here. Do I want to take it right now? Because there's a chance that LeBron and Luka plays to get a cheaper number. I think this is a Clippers night. Lakers coming off a back-to-back. Clippers take down Los Angeles Lakers tonight in L.A. It's your boy down the right side. We'll be right back with Moneyline.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Moneyline on a Friday, last day of February 2025. Tomorrow, March Madness starts Sunday. Conference tournament action, the Atlantic Sun gets underway, and a plethora of other conferences throughout that week. And then the big boys step to the table in roughly, what, a week and a half at this point. So tonight, we do have a card in college basketball. It's not that bad. So let's have some fun here, right? Set the mood, set the table. A little Get Money by the Junior Mafia out here, because that's what we're all aiming to do. Can we find some spots here that make some sense? Can we lace down some wagers that'll be fun to cheer on? Biggest game tonight, you could probably argue, what, UCLA and Purdue? Broke this game down on the early line with them. And for me, it's simple. It was 140.5 this morning. Let me see what we're up to or at now. Ooh, 138.5. So we're dropping, and I agree with that. If I did do a video this morning at 140.5 as the total for this basketball game, and I do think it stays under. You just take a look at like matchups here where UCLA's offense doesn't shoot the three-point shot all that much 36% of the time. 36% of the time also Purdue's offense going against two teams, Purdue's defense and UCLA's defense, that allow the three-point shot. So if those three-point shots aren't great, and by the way, Purdue's defense and UCLA's defense defend the three-point line pretty well, even though they do let you shoot the three-point shot. I think this game has a tendency to stay to the under. Is it a great game? No. But it's the biggest game of the night. That's what I'm looking forward to. I think that game stays under the 140.5, which now live at most outlets here is 138.5. So going in my direction. Iowa and Northwestern tonight from Evanston, Illinois. Battle of the Big Ten. Just doing a quick handicap here as well. I love this too, because I didn't go through the overall card yet. So sometimes it's fun just live on the air, the spitball topics and see which way that you would want to go here. Iowa's defense, there's 18 teams in the Big Ten. They're the worst defense there is. They're 18 out of 18. They do turn you over a little bit, but Northwestern doesn't turn the basketball over. But here's the thing. They'll let you shoot the three-point shot and not defend it. We're talking about Iowa's defense. The issue is going to be Northwestern's offense only makes about 33% of the time from three-point range, and 11th out of 18 teams in volume. So you're really not taking advantage of that. They don't get to the free throw line all that much. So it's not really a side that I would like. Say, hey, Northwestern can score because Iowa's defense just is really bad. You need two to tango. You need a good offense to go against a bad defense to really try to exploit that. Iowa on offense, 6 out of 18 teams in conference play. They don't get to the free throw line, but they don't turn the basketball over. They like to shoot the three-point shot, and for somewhat, Northwestern will let you shoot it. For me, not really an advantage either way. UNLV versus Nevada tonight. Out at the Thomas and Mack Center, good ball game as it sets up here out there in the Mountain West. What do you got record-wise? 16-12 Nevada, but they are 8-9 in conference play. And we take a look at UNLV, 9-8 in conference play, but have won 4 out of their past 5 basketball games. Matchup out there, not really a great tempo game. Nevada's defense turns you over better than anybody in conference play, but keep in mind there's 11 teams in their conference. They are number one overall doing that. But also, dead last is Nevada at defending the three-point line. However, UNLV doesn't shoot a lot of three-point shots, and they don't do it with great acrimony, per se. So we'll leave that out of the equation. Don't like that game all that much. We'll keep speeding through these. Kent State and Akron out of the MAC. This game is at home for Akron. Here's some of the concepts that we like here. Number one, most efficient offense in MAC play. That is Akron. Number one, most efficient defense in MAC play. That's Kent State. How about that? You take a look at getting to the free throw line, which Akron doesn't do. 12th out of 12 teams. So they're going to be relying on what? The three-point shot. Kent State defends the three-point shot pretty well, and Kent State does foul. But how about this? 12th in conference play at scoring at the free throw line. Only 14% of their offense is Akron. Kent State, however, gives up 24% of their points from the free throw line. So if you're shooting a lot of three-point shots, how are you actually getting to the free throw line? So for me, this matchup is, yes, Akron can overwhelm with the three-point line and win that game. They're at home. But if the three-point shot isn't going down, how are we actually going to get to the free throw line if we don't really go inside? And also, 11th most stingy team inside the arc, that is Kent State's defense. That's why they're number one. But if we flip it over to the other side, Akron's got the best offense in conference and the second best defense in conference play. They play great defense as well. So Kent State, Akron for me, probably would be a lean towards the under, but not necessarily loving that play at all. James Madison and Texas State tonight doing battle in the Sun Belt Conference. Last game of the season for these two before they get into their conference tournaments. Let's see here, going over, don't really like to shoot the three-point shot. Texas State's defense is really bad at this point. So again, not really much to play with. We're not getting the cream of the crop tonight, but still getting some decent conference level. Now, sometimes you know me. Instead of looking at the better basketball games of the day, I sort of tilt towards the bottom of that card because I like to play mismatches. Give me a really good offense against a bad defense. Give me a really good defense against a bad offense and see how you can exploit that. Arkansas State's offense, number one in conference play out of 14 teams here in the Sun Belt. So that's already a good start. How about ULM's defense? 12th out of 14 teams. Okay, we got something we could start off with. ULM's defense doesn't really turn you over. Arkansas State is very good with the basketball. Arkansas State's offense, their game plan isn't necessarily to get to the free throw line, and ULM doesn't foul. Okay. Arkansas State's offense is a very good rebounding offense against a not-so-good rebounding defense. Okay. Let's start to play this out. Arkansas State from the three-point line tonight. They shoot about 34% of this team, which isn't terrible. It's not great. But fifth in conference play at launching from the three-point line against a team that's second to last in allowing you to shoot the three-point shot. So now we got an opening here for us, right? And they do play with some tempo. They do shoot 75% as a team from the free throw line. This game could make sense. And also understand this. Point distribution for Arkansas State on offense is number 3 out of 14 teams from the three-point line, which means they rely on the three-point shot. Number 2 out of 14 teams at point distribution at giving up points from the three-point line, That's ULM's defense. So right now, you hear the clicker? I'm going to go down and write down Arkansas State team total at this point. And if you're looking from the other direction where you say, you know what? How's their defense do? Well, Arkansas State's number one on offense and defense. ULM is really bad on defense. Even worse, if it makes sense on offense, guys. The worst, the least efficient team in conference play is ULM. They don't like to shoot the three-point shot all that much. And good for them, because Arkansas State will chase you off the line and defend it. They will score a little bit inside the arc. This seems like an absolute blowout, by the way. Like, if you're doing an alt parlay the other night, where I had two teams that were favored by about 20, dipped them down to 11.5 and 12.5 points. Both, one covered by over the 20 points. One won the game by, I think, 19 points. That was Lipscomb. And I paired that up with an Arizona State alt-line team totaled 63.5, which ended up scoring, I think, 81 points. They lost 91 to 81 in that game. But this is one of those where I don't think you could go wrong. I think Arkansas State runs them up the flagpole. The only thing giving them hope is UL Monroe is at home. But ULM's offense, just as bad as well. So maybe even like a ULM team total to the under, paired up with the Arkansas State team total to the over at that point, to be honest. It should be a bludgeoning at this point here. We keep looking down at the bottom of the standings, and again, same conference that will dip our toes into the water, Louisiana and South Alabama in the Sun Belt Conference. Not great basketball teams, but looks like we do have mismatches here. Louisiana's offense, much like ULM, terrible in conference play. 14 teams, they're 12th in efficiency here. They don't get to the free throw line. They don't shoot the three-point shot all that well, and they don't dominate from inside the paint. But if you look at South Alabama's offense, I always get a kick out of it. Their USA is the moniker that they go by. Decent team on offense, doesn't turn the basketball over, but does like to shoot the three-point shot. Third in conference play at volume. However, Louisiana's defense does defend it well. They don't necessarily chase you off of the three-point line, but is what it is. By the way, Southern Alabama's offense, or excuse me, defense, they let you shoot more three-point shots against them than any other team in conference play, which is interesting, but not really a lifeline in that one here. So we'll continue down this handicapping path, because I do want to take a look at tomorrow as well. But right now, maybe the blowout of all blowouts today, Arkansas State ULM. That's UL Monroe, people. A lot more to get to, a lot more fun to have. It's a Friday, right here on the Sports Grid Network. I'm Donnie Wrightside, working on a solo mission.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Who's having fun handicapping? Come on, it's Handicapping Friday right on the Sports Grid Network. It's what we do. Hot topics, handicapping, hand in hand. It's your boy Donnie Wrightside here on a solo mission, the best hour of your day. Yeah, it's what we get down and have some business to do, even on a Friday when it's not an overall exciting card, because we're going to take a look at Saturday in just a few moments. Penn Cornell and the Ivy. Donnie, what are you talking about? Who's betting Penn Cornell? Cornell's offense is very good, people. You want to know why? They shoot the three-point shot. 47% of their total shot attempts come from the three-point line. You take a look at Penn, fourth out of eight teams at letting you shoot the three-point shot at about 40% of the time, as I should say. They should be able to score points tonight. Also, Cornell, the fastest team in Ivy League play, tempo-wise, going up against Penn, who's six out of eighth on offense. But you should get points here, and Cornell should win that basketball game, I do believe. Now, can I see, are there any other higher-scoring anticipated games that we can show here? Well, look at Princeton. 79-76 is what KenPom is predicting here. How about Princeton's offense? Dead last in efficiency. Going up against Columbia's defense, dead last in efficiency. However, you know what? Sometimes you just got to have some fun. Now, the only shame of this is here. You know your boy DRS. Where do I live? I live in New Jersey. Where does Princeton play basketball in New Jersey? Even though this game is at Columbia in New York, I won't be able to bet it. But I look at this and say, Princeton fires from three-point range. Columbia lets you shoot from three-point range. I'm just going to write it down because I can't bet it. Princeton team total. I'm just going to watch that one play out tonight since I can't participate in it. Princeton's not all that fast because Princeton never is all that fast. But Columbia's offense is number two at average possession length on offense at only 16 seconds, where Princeton is close to 19. Princeton doesn't get to the free throw line, Princeton is just going to launch three-point shots all night long. By the way, they don't shoot it all that well at 32%. Let's see. Xavier Lee is a 35% free throw, three-point shooter. CJ Happy, what a great name right there. Doesn't shoot all that much, but he's at 33%. Caden Pierce is at 32%. Jackson Hickey, 34%. Blake Peters, 39%. That's a fun one to look at. All right, let's get to the main bag for tomorrow. We got a lot of good basketball games to take a look at. One in particular, 1 p.m. start tomorrow. Lexington, Kentucky, Rupp Arena, Auburn, and Kentucky. This should be great because you have one of the best offenses in college basketball, and actually the second best in terms of efficiency rating in the SEC, the Auburn Tigers. 16 teams are in the SEC. Kentucky, 14th overall in efficiency on defense. Auburn doesn't shoot the three-point shot all that much, but they do. They're effective at 36% as a team. 14th out of 16 teams at letting you shoot the three-point shot, that's Kentucky's defense. Kentucky plays with a lot of tempo. Auburn doesn't play with a ton of tempo, but boy, they can sizzle. You don't say, oh, let's slow it down. Look at their last couple games. 106 versus Mississippi, 82 versus Georgia. Arkansas played them close in one of those games, 67-60, because that was coming off the 1-2 battle against Alabama, which they scored 94 points in. This is a team that can get after it. So when I look at this and get excited, somehow, some way, we're going to find a way with Auburn. Now, Kentucky's offense likes to shoot the three-point shot, makes it just about more than anybody. By the way, in national, they're 25th nationally on the season, which is 37%, but in conference play, in the best conference in college basketball, they're almost 40% from three-point range. However, Auburn's defense, number one at overall at defending the three-point line, and they're very good at chasing you off of it. So if we are looking today, I don't have the lines up, and maybe they're starting to filter out for tomorrow. Let me just check. They're probably out with the big games. Let's see. Auburn is a 5.5-point favorite over Kentucky tomorrow in a total of 167.5. Because I understand how packed Rupp Arena is going to be, but this is not a good matchup for Kentucky on offense. And usually say, like, hey, Kentucky's a good matchup for anybody, regardless of who they play anywhere. And normally I might agree, but tomorrow you're taking a look at an Auburn team that should be able to do what they want against Kentucky's defense. And number two, Kentucky's offense, which is great, which is fluid, they don't match up all that well unless they just overpower Auburn from the three-point line, which based on the numbers, doesn't look like that's really the case. 27% are what teams shooting against Auburn from the three-point line on the season. Like if you go for all 360-plus NCAA college basketball teams, Auburn's 11th on defense at the three-point line. And then again, in SEC play, they're number one and even better than what they were in some of those out-of-conference games. That's really impressive. Keep going down the list. I mean, there are big game after big game tomorrow. Texas Tech and Kansas. I'm glad we're getting to this game today because I do have a little bit of an affinity for Texas Tech. They can make the three-point shot. Here's the problem. Kansas is very good on defense. Number two overall, and by the way, their effective field goal percentage on defense in conference play out of 16 teams is number one. They get after it. They don't turn you over. That's probably their only deficit. But when you talk about shooting percentage, which Texas Tech loves the three-point shot, they'll let you shoot the three-point shot. But they defend it better than anybody in conference play at 29%. Inside the arc, they'll let you score a little bit, but they defend it better than anybody else at 46%. And they don't foul. So when I was breaking down Texas Tech a couple of times this week, they're very good, as we just said, at the three-point shot. Their best player from three-point range is Chance McMillan, who's missed the past couple games. If he does play tomorrow, because they didn't have him against Houston, they lost by 8 points. Didn't have against West Virginia. They won by 22 points. This is a really good team. But I need as many daggers as I can get from three-point range. And he's one of those guys that is ultra-efficient. Shoots four, makes two. Get the point? Like, the kid can light it up from downtown. That's what I'm going to have my eye on right there. But if we're just looking overall at some of these numbers and statistics, Kansas defense is really good. And also, Texas Tech's defense. This is it. You know what? This is actually a spot that's starting to look forward towards Kansas for me. And I don't like Kansas all that much. But styles make fights, I always tell you guys. Kansas on offense doesn't really care about the three-point line. You know who's number one at chasing off the three-point line? It's Texas Tech. So going inside, major advantage for Kansas. Let's see if I can quickly find what that spread is in that game tomorrow for Kansas. -3.5. It seems like a Kansas game, people. It does. It's your boy Donnie Wrightside here. One more segment to go. Don't you go anywhere. Keep the dial right here on the Sports Grid Network, Sirius XM Channel 159.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Got a hot topic that just popped up here I want to get to in just a few moments here in the NFL. But tomorrow, when we talk about smash jobs out there tomorrow night, right? Where it's like, that's Cal Fullerton versus UC San Diego. We're out on the West Coast. It's 10 p.m. tomorrow, like literally one of the last games of the day in the Big West Conference. Cal State Fullerton is absolutely abysmal. UC San Diego, let's say they played them last time. Let's see, UC San Diego, they had to play them twice. 90-51. Cal State Fullerton got beat by UC San Diego last time they played. They're going to match up again tomorrow. And for looking at ratings, like 360-plus teams in college basketball, 344th, that's Cal State Fullerton. Now, this supposed to be is a crush job, but also, there's 11 teams in their conference. Cal State Fullerton is dead last on offense and defense. UC San Diego's number one on offense and number two on defense. This would be unbelievable. If you're looking at three-point shots, close to 50% of the shots for UC San Diego come from the three-point line. 10th out of 11 teams that are chasing you off the three-point line, that's Cal State Fullerton's defense. And even if we flip it over to offense, UC San Diego does everything well. Cal State Fullerton does absolutely nothing well, which includes this. I don't know if I've seen this. Has to be one of the highest rates in the nation. Turnover percentage, the 347th in the country and dead last in conference play. Cal State Fullerton turns the basketball over 20% of the time. And that means one out of every five possessions up the court, they don't even get a shot off. They just turn it over. They're 11th in conference play at rebounding. But get this, they're number one at getting to the free throw line. But here's the issue. UC San Diego doesn't foul. So if you don't foul and that's how you score your points, we might be looking at a bloodbath tomorrow. Now, that line isn't out. But KenPom gives you the estimated scores, which is usually pretty close to the spread itself. 83-57. So 83-57, quick math, 26-point favorite. That looks like that's going to be your smash job of the day. So tomorrow I'm going to find some smash jobs. You can hit team totals and have blowout victories. That could be one of them right there. It really could be. It really could be. So maybe we'll keep that one certainly in focus at this point. But let's take a look now at some NFL news that is dropping right now. Is it a done deal formality? No, it is not. But we're talking about the Green Bay Packers and the Seattle Seahawks. We went over after the Super Bowl ended in the days after the aftermath of the Eagles winning another Lombardi trophy to say, you know what, how can teams improve on the next season and what could they use? Looking at the free agent market, it's not a great one for the wide receiver position. That's for sure. But we were saying the Green Bay Packers' evolution of that football team is indeed a true number one. And Sleeper NFL on Twitter/X says, the Packers have a trade offer on the table for wide receiver DK Metcalf per Seattle beat writer at Corbin Smith NFL. The trade package would have to include the number 23 overall pick, which would be the Packers, and one of Dontavian Wicks or Romeo Doubs for the Seattle Seahawks to move DK. I would do it in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. You have the quarterback that you want to get to the next level. Give him a next level wide receiver. They have the same wide receiver at every spot. So let's just say Christian Watson, who you can just say, hey, come back and run in straight line really fast, goes on one side. DK Metcalf's on the other, and you're going to have a complement still of slot wide receivers that you can pop in. Let's just say they trade Doubs and you keep Wicks. You put Wicks in the slot. Super fast, super quick, decent tight ends, great running game, the perfect move for them. Now, you might say, why would Seattle want to move on for DK Metcalf? Well, they need help in other areas, and they do have a competent wide receiving core, and it's apparent now that Jaxon Smith-Njigba looks like he's ready to be down to take over the lead share in targets yards, and touchdowns for that team. That may be also a transition at the quarterback position, whether or not they want to have Geno Smith. But this is the stuff that I can't stand the combine. But if it gets us with everybody in place in one spot where trades can actually go down, it just makes some sense. It does. There is no way, shape, or form that if I'm the Green Bay Packers, which again, it's not as if Seattle reached out and was like, hey, let's put these parameters together. The Packers understand one thing. If you want me, DRS, to take that franchise seriously, they need a number one. They get DK Metcalf, they start to move up that chart for me. And the Eagles beat them opening day of the season down in Brazil, beat him again in the playoffs. One thing is missing. Dominant wide receiver on one side would be the perfect complement to that offense. That'll do it for the show today on a Friday. Basketball, looking forward to it tonight. Looking forward to it tomorrow. And no doubt, we'll be back on Monday. Chris Pine, the Wheels of Steel. It's your boy down the right side. Thanks for tuning in to the Sports Grid Network. See you Monday.